The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, we're going to jump right in. Can anyone hear me? Dave Burns is saying, I heard something. Let me know. I have no concept if... Darn, it's Juan's voice. I heard something. Oh, not that guy. I need to know. Levels. Someone give me a mic check. Whenever something borks at the last possible minute, my wireless mics just cut out and I had to scramble to put something back together. But now that we've established you can hear me, let me know if I need to turn up or turn down. I get miserable feedback. I don't know what you're hearing. So I'm going to have amazing audio for the audio version of the podcast later on when this gets produced as an audio podcast. But if the stream is not sounding good, then it's on you guys. You must want a bad sounding stream. Okay, Barry Dunston is saying that we can hear me. Can definitely hear you fine. Yeah, I can. Oh, Greg All's in the chat. He can't stay long, but everyone say, hey, Greg. He's going through some family and some life issues, and if everyone can sort of send the positive vibes and the goodwill to Greg, I'm sure he would appreciate it. Let's see. Perfectly audible, but relatively less loud than on YouTube. Okay, so again, I still feel like Twitch is the superior streaming platform for all of this. We're trying something. TK and I are chatting some behind the scenes on what to do with podcasting and with platforms like YouTube. So you might be seeing this show up in a slightly different place than where it normally would show up. I still feel Twitch is the best main core hosting for all of this. So it was the most rambling, worst intro for a podcast ever. And I love it. Folks, thanks so much for tuning in. This is, of course, the Monday Morning Tech Chat show on the SGGQA podcast channel. That SGG stands for Some Gadget Guy, which is me. It's the worst name for a podcast ever. But we've recently fixed our Spotify feed, so if you've been listening to this show on the Spotify, you should be able to find the show there. And, of course, when we talk about bad podcast titles, the QA of this terrible podcast title is the most important part, because that stands for question and answer. We like to kick off our week, have a fun tech conversation about the news that happened over the last week, or maybe some news broke over the weekend. You don't know. It could happen. But no, we really want to sit down, kind of sort out our feels, and do a better job of following up on tech stories over time. So I'm seeing an amazing group of names in this chat. Coppa Cash, again, we said Greg, Dave Burns, Barry Johnson, Farhan, Snorkel, J-Man150, Grounded Tech popping in and saying, hey, BJ Grace7 and Este Bandido and Grounded Tech. This is the best episode. Coppa Cash. Did I mention Coppa Cash? Sveticus. Hello, everyone. Is having a stupendous this. I hope everyone is having a stupendous morning. I'm assuming that's what you meant to say. Typing on the internet is hard. Dave Burns, there are no answers, only more questions. TK Bay popping in. Sabajo to the worst named podcast ever. Truer words, my friend, truer words. It's a badge of honor to have maybe the worst named podcast for tech ever. Let me get this back to the right. Ryan was saying welcome, welcome, and Two Turbo. I can't say that name of a podcast on the show. I would get kicked off of one of these platforms. So thank you everybody for tuning in. We've got a bit more of a streamlined show happening. I sat down this morning and I had almost a dozen links. And I'm like, okay. I need to whittle this back a little bit, so we're kind of compressing the number of stories we're going to talk about this week. I'm going to try and hit this show with just a little bit more focus, because especially once we get into the gadget block, I've been getting a lot of questions about things like the Pixel 7 and going to Google events and what that relationship looks like. I just recently watched a video the reason I watched the video is because Dr. Ian Cutress was on it. Was it PC Mag? I think it was PC Mag. But they were talking about ethics in computer journalism. And again, I felt like, okay, you know, I don't feel like I'm running afoul of any FTC guidelines. But especially as we're getting into the second half of the gadget block, it'd probably be worth having just a little bit of a conversation on what's been going on my channel. And so we're gonna carve a little time out for that, under the context of smartphone from Google just launched, and Juan showed up at a party where he was looking at said phone, and there's been a sort of a mismatch of conversations in different regions of the planet as to who's talking about Pixel 7 stuff and who isn't. So. Let's knock out some housekeeping, since the show already got off to kind of a shaky start, and we can go from there too. Grounded Tech, I mean, put it to the top of your watch list. The ethics video is on my watch later list. I've had conversations talking about PR. I had a wonderful sit down. We did sort of a co-stream talking about the end of LG. And Dr. Ian Cutress had me on his channel to talk about sort of some of the trends that we see in tech journalism. The PC Mag article takes this to an even higher level when we're getting into like servers and consulting and PC building and just the semiconductor industry in general. And it really is. It's a very well-informed conversation from two experienced, like veterans of tech journalism. Like I would consider them to be journalists, not influencers. So let me get this out of the way here. And Dave Burns, I really hope this isn't turning into another Gamergate. No one needs that kind of noise, especially getting co-opted by like really ugly intentioned individuals. So last week was a little bit lean. On my personal channel, was wrapping up some projects, and I've got some stuff coming up that I'm going to be really proud of. I posted on the Patreon. I'm building some e-bikes. I'm working with a company to do some sponsored content on mobility and more sustainable transportation, and taking some of the edge off of much, much higher gas prices. Those videos are going to be staggered, and they're going to be coming out over the next month, maybe over the next 6 weeks. I'm actually kind of hunching a little bit because Lex is just learning how to ride a bike. Not like I'm putting her on a 20-mile-per-hour e-bike. She's just learning how to ride a bike. And so we went out to the high school parking lot, and we ran loops for like an hour, just going in between like parking cement barriers and like, oh, don't get too close to the sidewalk. And now we're going to come up on the edge and okay, got to pedal. And this is how you brake. And I actually have this little crick in the middle of my back. And you're like, oh, if I hunch, it's going to be the worst. It's going to be so bad. So apologies, as my posture is going to be weird this whole stream. A little bit leaner week this last week, but we still had a couple videos go out that I was really proud of. So first off, let me just kind of click this over. The biggie was Xiaomi 12T first look, a great phone in a crowded market. TK and I broke down our experiences on best of our week. And I will talk about this a little in the gadget block, but looking at Xiaomi's new 12T and 12T Pro, he got the Pro, I got the 12T. We kind of got to like tag team again, back again, a couple videos and reviews on Xiaomi's refreshed, streamlined performance options, where the 12S is kind of a line of refreshed premier or premium options. The 12T is a refresh performance, like they're a little bit more streamlined. I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll talk about them in just a bit. And then the video I was most proud of putting out last week, this is bad and Google should feel bad. Google made one of the worst phone cases I've ever used. I am not a case reviewer. I don't mean to slight case reviewers. I understand, like, if you've got a popular phone and then you talk about accessories for a popular phone, those videos will do phenomenally great traffic on YouTube. I don't care. I really don't. I get to a certain point where it's like, if I've got a bumper on this phone, that's probably good enough. And I'm going through enough phones where the customization of a phone matters almost not at all to me. It's very difficult for me to tap into that because I'm not excited about it. If you watch a case video from me, it's going to be like, yeah, I put a case on my phone and it did what a case was supposed to do. And maybe I kind of like the design or maybe I don't. I'm not the guy you want doing accessory reviews because I'm genuinely not going to be that excited about it. The flip side of that is I'm probably the guy you want to talk about how an accessory might fail. So this is my Pixel 6 Pro. My daughter has tried to make this case look a little nicer with this beautiful little Trader Joe's sunflower sticker. This podcast not brought to you by Trader Joe's. But watching how the plastic is peeling apart, how the internal frame is cracked, how yellowed and tea-stained it is, this is one of the absolute worst cases I've ever used. And so when it started getting gross, it started getting gross like 2 months into using this phone, I said, hey, you know what? I'm going to rock this. The Pixel 6 Pro genuinely is keeping my SIM card. It's my in-betweener phone. I really like what Google does with software. Some of the calling features are absolutely fantastic. I'm going to run with this. I'm really going to do this. I'm not going to switch this case out until I switch over and start using a Pixel 7. I have a Peak Design case on back order. That's the one I really want to try and use just because I love Peak Design tripods. But I was like, you know, I'm going to see how far this is going to go. I don't know that this case is going to last to me getting a new case for it. It is falling apart that aggressively just into its first year of use. For how expensive a first party case can be, I have been phenomenally disappointed. There's the mini cut down version of the full video. If you want to see in greater detail how bad that case is, that video is on somegadgetguide.com. Okay. All right. Let me get this out of the way here. So those were the biggies. I also did like a cut down of the Pajama Podcast. I published it as like a separate little standalone piece because there was a great comment from Tech Lovin' Mama about camera pro modes. And I felt, you know, like that really needs to be its own little video piece. So that's also been sort of published and it's on somegadgetguide.com. Excuse me, man, I got the coffee burps and they're super gross. So Dave Burns, my Steam Deck may be arriving tomorrow or maybe arriving Wednesday. Oh, sorry. So that's exciting. I only saw the first part of your comment, but that is really cool. I'm really excited to see Steam Decks actually, like, shipping. You know, so you go in and you still put in, like, your pre-order and you get in line, but they're turning them around so much faster now that you can almost just straight up buy them, which is really cool. I've got a video written. I might just turn it into a text piece because I'm kind of overloaded right now and I genuinely don't have the bandwidth for multiple videos on follow-ups of topics. So I've got a script written for the Honor Magic 4. I've got a script written for the Steam Deck. I really want to do a bit more of a comparison between the iQOO and the Xiaomi 12T. And just genuinely too much. It's too much to write it all out, shoot it, edit it, produce it, handle all of the social media. And YouTube has not been fun for those kinds of follow-up commentaries. So I've been doing a bit more just written pieces. Those now might start being more written pieces. Not just my editorials, but also like the actual practical nuts and bolts handling these gadgets and long-term commentary. Maybe that needs to also be written content, and I'll leave YouTube just for the, here's the first impressions, and I just got it. Isn't it so exciting? Because this is the most popular peak SEO time for this product. Now, moving on. I really hate that we have to play that game with YouTube now. So, that was housekeeping. It was a rambling mess of housekeeping. All of the links, all of the stories, all of the show notes, everything that you'll want to look at that we're going to be talking about today is available on somegadgetguy.com for the show for the podcast, the show notes this week. Aditya Anil, a steamed deck, you say? What, my good sir? Might that be the latest in home maintenance? Yeah, that's spot on, man. So you've got a deck, and your deck gets really messy. Every climate has its own challenges for like a good hardwood social gathering area for a home. And so one of the most effective ways to kind of clean that out is with the steamer. So you've got this deck cleaning appliance that steams your deck. That's a Steam Deck. And a lot of people are really excited about this kind of easier technological advancement in home maintenance. So yeah, I think Valve has done an amazing job, which is appropriate because the company name is Valve, and you need valves in a steam pressure deck cleaner. So it's pretty cool. But seriously, if you've been considering the acquisition of a Steam Deck, I'm a big fan. It's been real good. I think now it's TK has his. He traveled with his. Andrew, Fat Produce, has his. Now Dave Burns looks like he's getting in line. Who else? Ron Guido is saying hello, by the way. He's saying hi, all. Who else in here? I'm pretty sure someone else in this chat has a Steam Deck already. And I can't remember the people who have spoken up and said yes. It has completely changed my relationship with my PC gaming library. It is amazing. 2Turbo, that's right. 2Turbo has a Steam Deck. I love it. So, let's get this out of the way. Oh, Joe Hickey saying extreme skins do cool skin. Blah, 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 I can't say that. Extreme skins do cool skins for the Steam Deck too. Extreme skins do cool skins for the Steam Deck. Extreme skins do cool skins for the Steam Deck too. Let me see if I can do that one more time. This is going to be like my tongue twister, my warm-up. I am not caffeinated enough to pull this off. Okay. Extreme skins do cool skins for the Steam Deck, too. Only took me 4 tries. All right. Yes, all of the links for this week's show, somegadgetguy.com. There's going to be a post. It's going to be great. let's get the news block out of the way while I'm in any way, shape, or form competently coherent. This show's already kind of falling apart. I jumped in and like it throws you off. Obviously, I'm way off like my normal patter. I'm pushing go. It's 8:55 in the a.m. Pacific time, and my mics are locked. Like, they're on, the screens are on, but I'm not getting signal. I'm like, what's going on? I'm trying to do the long button hard reset to swap them out. All the settings get changed. I'm trying to click them back in. I'm down to, like, the last 30 seconds. I'm trying to share the links for the show. It screws with your brain. Makes it really difficult to like get back into the flow. So we're going to get back into the flow, jumping into the news block here. Our next ridiculous follow-up. So we've been keeping an eye on this deal between Elon Musk and Twitter, and what a horrible joke of like the application of business law that this has become. It was a bad idea when he tried to just muscle in. It was a bad idea when he tried to weasel out. Now it seems like he's trying to get back on the train of buying Twitter. And Twitter also expects that he is not doing this in good faith. I think there's enough personality evidence to suggest that Twitter's probably accurate. So this is the most recent follow-up, coming by way of Ars Technica, written up by the amazing John Brodkin. Elon Musk can't be trusted to complete merger, Twitter tells judge. Elon Musk's latest promise to buy Twitter can't be trusted, the company told a Delaware Court of Chancery judge yesterday. Quote, now on the eve of trial, defendants declare they intend to close after all. Trust us, they say. We mean it this time. And so they ask to be relieved from a reckoning on the merits, Twitter wrote in a filing that opposed Musk's motion to stay the trial. Quote, to justify that relief, they propose an order that allows them an indefinite time to close on the basis of a conditional withdrawal of their unlawful notices of termination, coupled with an explicit reservation of all claims and defenses in the event a closing does not occur. Defendant's proposal is an invitation to further mischief and delay. So Musk is really good at playing this game, though, because the article that we were going to talk about was Elon Musk saying, hey, I'm totally game. Let's go ahead and do it. Let's do the deal. I'm going to buy Twitter. And that got all the big headlines. The follow-up to this, Twitter still deserves their day in court. Musk has been trying to avoid the deal that he agreed to. Again, in the whole realm of business law, unless Musk is like literally just handing them the money to buy Twitter in this moment, which he obviously is not, then Twitter still has a legal obligation to protect not only the company, but then also the merit of this deal as it was originally proposed and as Musk originally agreed to it. So yet again, this is yet another example of Musk using money, power, and influence to obfuscate the legal wranglings of a very complicated business acquisition, and he's playing a game. Just as he was playing a game with all of these requests for information, for records, for chat logs, for text messages, to delay. And this also comes on the heels of like one of the other investors that was going to try and help like bankroll this based off of Elon Musk's holding and other corporate stock seems to be backing out. Like they're not going to help Elon finance this deal. So it's just been bad all around. And I have zero faith in Musk being a good faith participant in any of this now. Every single opportunity this side has had to join the conversation or to hold up their end of the bargain or to abide by the deals they set, the terms that they agreed to, they have tried to find some way of delaying or weaseling out of it. This is total clown shoes at this point. This is some of the worst op. This looks like the plot of like a bad courtroom dramedy. I don't know if anyone was a fan of Boston Legal back in the day. James Spader. I've got a huge man crush on James Spader. That, you know, wacky hijinks ensue, and the lawyer, he's so eccentric, but he's a legal genius. He'll always pull out the victory at the end. It feels like that. Like they're trying to walk in and disrupt law. At this point, you're just like take the hit. It's kind of over. Dave Burns, I was a bigger fan of Night Court. Ron Guido, this whole deal has a musky smell. I love it. I mean, I hate it because I still genuinely prefer these sort of short burst disposable interactions on Twitter. Just the format and layout of Twitter makes sense to my brain, and I like that it's one of the few that, obviously everyone's trying to copy TikTok right now, but it's one of the few that has resisted the hardcore algorithmic manipulation of content. There's still manipulation of content, but what I mean is the hardcore, we're manipulating everything that you see. It's one of the few that I can still go up to the top and click a little button and say, give me my timeline in chronological order, not in some kind of manipulated popularity order. That's it. Twitter's one of the last games in town from sort of like the last era of social media. And at this point, I'm radically considering just going back to like RSS feed readers and trying to like minimize my use of Reddit. You know, like I'm so thirsty for just the timeliness and the less manicured version of the internet. I want something that's a bit broader than that. And whenever I look at alternative platforms, they often get infiltrated by bad faith performers just looking to sort of co-opt a structure for a messaging purpose. It's so much harder now, today, to kind of recreate what was exciting about like the MySpace era of social media. So, Elon Musk is bad at business. I think we've established. Dave Burns, you can toggle a timeline feature for actual timelines. I don't know what you mean. Like on Twitter? Because that's what I just said. That's what I do. From Pacostin, I like Mastodon, although not using either seems to help me focus quite a bit. I have only dabbled with Mastodon. Again, it's kind of the same issue that I described before. It's Mastodon isn't like a singular platform as far as I understood it. And so as I've tried to dabble with different groups on other social, like what was the other one that I was, for like a hot minute, I was trying to post on WT Social and what is it, Vero or Veru? There was another like wannabe social media, kind of Instagram-y, but also kind of Twittery. And again, every time you go in there, you're like, yeah, let me try this. Let me do this. Let me see if I can meet some people or interact. And then it's got a surge of popularity and then it all kind of deflates on it. And it's really frustrating that we've kind of ratcheted up the social conditioning of the popularity of this kind of algorithmic metric. So it works. I think that's the frustrating thing, is it obviously works, but it's bad for you. It's like literally bad for your brain. All right. Sorry. I'm going to, two turbo Twitter seems very good at giving me uninformed takes on things I like. It makes me hate it. So in part that's on you, because I don't follow people on Twitter who put out bad takes, and I mute and block people on Twitter that are bad faith, you know, poop stirrers. There are a number just in our kind of collective tech circles that love to put out these like, hey, I'm just telling it how it is. Why is everybody booing me? All right, well, you just go and do you then. It's just opinions. It's all opinions. All of those people are gone. Don't keep hate following them. Get rid of them. You know, brush them off. Twitter becomes amazing when you manicure it. Twitter, if you just kind of let it go, then yeah, it's just as toxic as any other social media platform. But I can manicure it in ways that Facebook won't let me manicure Facebook. YouTube won't let me manicure. I can't just turn off a channel that I don't want to see in recommendations. I have to go through this silly process of saying, don't recommend this channel to me anymore. And if I watch anything adjacent to that channel, YouTube brings it back. Well, you watch something that's kind of like this channel that you told us not to recommend, so we're going to recommend it again. And I can't just say, no, shut it down. But I can go to Twitter and say, like, this guy always has the worst takes designed just to get outrage traffic. Mute him. I never want to see his content in my timeline ever again. And Twitter, with that kind of light touch moderation has become phenomenal. I love it. Again, it's like every single time you see something on Twitter that pisses you off, don't signal boost it, don't reply to it, don't respond to it. That just draws more attention to it. Instead, and again, this is the same, like every time you see a YouTube video that's got a dumb hot take, every time you see an article posted that has like a ridiculous premise or is unfair, instead of giving it more attention and giving it more power, which just makes it more profitable to keep doing that bad business, find someone you like and share one of their videos. I did this last night. Someone had another bad hot take about like, well, but pixels always fail. And instead, I was like, hey, you know what? Barry Johnson put out a video just talking about some of the new Pixel 7 features. I'm going to share that link instead of acknowledging any of the crap from someone who's putting out a bad faith effort in slamming this phone. That's it. You have to live the change you want to see in the world. And I still feel free of Elon Musk's direct influence over the platform. Twitter still has the best platform for that if you don't let it run wild like that.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Two Turbo, this is exactly what I mean. So Twitter still exists as a social media entity. Twitter only cares about your time on the site. YouTube, Facebook, they only care about your watch time. They want you consuming as much on the platform as possible. But until they take it away, and I'm sure under Elon Musk and further monetization efforts, this will probably get eroded. As it stands right now, Twitter has the best platform for manicuring the kinds of content you wish to evade. Too Turbo, that's true, I should mute them, but I get stuff like, because you are interested in Android, or liked by X person. And so I don't get those as often. First of all, I'm not big, but I've got enough followers that content is coming in regularly enough that Twitter doesn't seem to need to trick me into checking out the platform. I get so many notifications on Twitter, and I'm checking on Twitter regularly enough that in my notifications, they aren't putting in extra stuff just to try and trigger a reaction. If you don't use Twitter a lot, Twitter serves you these extra notifications to try and get you to look at the app again. And that's where you get a lot of those. Oh, but someone else liked this thing. Don't you want to see what someone else liked? I don't get those. I do. I get them. I have like a sort of a defunct Twitter account that I just never check in with. And if I hadn't muted just all notifications from that channel, I go in there and there are no notifications for the profile, but it's full of notifications on so-and-so liked this. You should check this out. Other people liked this. So that's part of the problem. But every single time that stuff comes in, mute it. Mute it and move on. Just get rid of it. Or if something really triggers you and you feel like I need to act on something, throw that energy into promoting stuff you like. Throw that energy into trying to highlight, to share, to embrace content you feel does deserve that kind of attention instead. Brian Billings, I couldn't really get into it. Brian says, I signed up for Vero. I like the application, but it appears to be mostly photographers, content creators right now. At least Westerners, almost like OG Flickr. And it's going to be like OG Flickr, I'd rather just go back to Flickr. You know what I mean? It's like, stop reinventing the things that have already been good. And I like that Flickr is owned by a photography site, SmugMug. I actually used to have a seller's account on SmugMug. There was a while there I was selling quite a bit of stock photography, and I closed it down. But it, if anyone's going to own a photography sharing social media site, I have way more faith in the monetization of that through a photography stock selling company, a stock photography selling company, as opposed to a social media site that has no monetization, builds up a huge fan base because it's cool, and then has to find some kind of further monetization through advertising. Flickr is so much better. If you want to look at cool photography, go to Flickr. Avoid other social media sites in the vein of Instagram. That's not going to be good photography. So I have way less experience with Vero. I don't know if Vero is operating like that. I really don't know what their business model is. I can't quite figure it out. So we'll have to see. But yeah, there's no shame. I don't share as frequently as I probably should, but I've been so much happier. Like, you remember what it used to be fun. You would fire up Instagram and just kind of scroll through photos, right? Like, that was just entertainment. And now when I try to just scroll through Instagram, everything is late. People are sharing life experiences. It's days later that I'll actually get that kind of thrown into my feed. You can see immediately, like, I linger on someone's post for a little bit, and then I'll get, like, four more of their posts. And like, that's not going to encourage me to keep using your application here. But I go over to Flickr, and it does feel a lot more like just that old school photo feed, amazing content. I'm starting to follow more like professional, especially like portraiture photographers, just because I'm so bad at portraiture. I'm so much happier. It is so much less pressure. It is so much less ratcheted. I can't recommend it enough. If you like pretty pictures of things, go back to Flickr. It's there. The new app is pretty good. And it's way less, like, aggressively manipulated to try and keep you scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Like, you can get your fill, you're done, walk away. It's so much nicer. It's really so much nicer. Oh, Geet Madden, I don't know how to use Twitter. People post too much over there for me to keep up. Again, it's not easy getting into the flow of things. Like, you have to learn how to speak the language of every social media site. But it's, I think it's worth the effort. I think it is, I would recommend it. I think it's good times. Dave Burns. Again, you summed this up way better than I did. Leaving a platform to start a new one with the exact same business model will recreate the problem we have today. I know what we're going to do. We're going to be like a new Instagram. You're just going to be a smaller user base of old Instagram. I love it. That's hilarious. Right. Oh, Geet Madden. I forgot about 500 Pics. I used to go to 500 Pics to get wallpapers. There are a ton of really good photos that people submit for free to download. That's another good one. I was not as big into like wallpapers and stuff. I have like a plain black background across two really large monitors. But yeah, there are always other opportunities to go and check this kind of stuff out. I really loved old school Flickr, and I was a fan of SmugMug. I thought SmugMug had a great business model. And combining the two is like the best peanut butter jelly time for people who really care about like fun photography. And like other people are saying, like you get higher quality images. Like it kind of matters now. You can see on our phone screens a better quality of shared image than anything that we'll get on Twitter or Instagram. Moving right along, I do want to, let me see how to get this out of the way here. See, Kappa Cash, this is part of it. One more reply here on social media sites, and then we got to move on. Kappa Cash says, Instagram has the toggle to show only those you follow. It's not on by default. First of all, that's crap, because I followed these channels for a reason, and now they're just injecting other stuff. But I have done that. The other issue, though, is I can't sort chronologically. And I don't want to engage with a platform that is sending me content from the people I follow. The people I'm telling Instagram I care about hours or days after they've shared that content. That, to me, is what's unacceptable. It's already bad enough that you have to dig through settings just to get an organized list of the people you follow. On top of that, the algorithms on Instagram are designed to keep me looking at Instagram by disrupting my relationship with real people. It's the same problem I have with YouTube. It's the same problem I have with Facebook. That is the cardinal sin. As soon as a platform goes to that kind of managed, sorted distribution of shared posts, I'm out. You have interrupted my relationship with another human being, getting the content I want to see when they're sharing it. I'm done. Your platform is dead. It is the worst aspect of all of this manicured social media. And it's why I desperately miss the old days of just having a feeder reader. And I could check out other people's blogs. And so many of my friends would write these little side things. And I could get an RSS feed for like a MySpace blog. You know, that was like the golden age of being able to keep up with what all my friends were doing. So let me get this out of the way here. Quick story. A lot of people had really long editorials to post about this. I'm just going to pull up the direct open letter. I, for one, welcome our future robot overlords, and I feel the work over at Boston Dynamics is critically important. This is an open letter to the robotics industry and our communities. General purpose robots should not be weaponized. This is a four-paragraph open letter from Boston Dynamics, and it's also signed by Unitree, Open Robotics, ClearPath. I think that's MW Botics, or maybe it's AM. I don't know that company. I'm actually going to have to look them up. And Agility Robotics. But basically, these are companies that are making these really cool mechanical platforms. I mean, we've all seen the Boston Dynamics videos. There was an amazing video just showing their like 30 years of research. And like, this is a robot that can barely stand on its own to a robot that's doing like parkour flips over an obstacle course. So they're now joining a conversation saying, we're creating the next era of mechanical operating tools, and we disagree with our products being used as platforms for weaponry. So it's going to be interesting to see. I'll be very curious, because companies like Boston Dynamics obviously make a lot of their money through things like government contracts. And at some point, we're going to have a corporate versus government conflict of how do we use this platform? It's a quadruped robot that can carry a lot of weight. Okay, well, in a tactical situation, that's really helpful as a support mechanism. Your soldiers are on the ground and your robot's carrying this gear. Awesome. Well, then it's only a small step to say, well, okay, well, now we're just going to bolt on some machine guns. Like, we're getting into the robotics ethics in a way that, unfortunately, we never really incorporated, like, the philosophy of, you know, like Isaac Asimov. I'm not saying like you can easily program robots to have the three laws of robotics, but we are needing now to kind of come back and address some of those issues in how we utilize these platforms and also how these companies get funding. You know, there's so much in a robotics company. They're going to make so much money in manufacturing and assembly and shipping and distribution. I'm so excited when I see a Boston Dynamics biped humanoid general form, not just because that can be like a robot butler. Excuse me. That can be like a robot butler that can like clean a house and do all this cool like menial labor. I'm also excited because the more we can build a robotic platform around the general use that the human body would need to interact with, the better we can also make tools for accessibility. The better we make a biped humanoid robot, the better we can make tools to help replace people who have lost, to help heal people who have lost limbs, to help people who can't walk on their own, to help people who have other challenges in getting around and interacting with a world that's generally built for people like me. I'm of just slightly under average height. Everything is made for me. There are so many people who can't interact with the world in the same way that I can, just because of different challenges that they face. And a world where we can make better tools for those people is a world I want to live in. Unfortunately, the better we make those tools, the better we also make tools that can then be co-opted for other uses like advanced weaponry platforms. If I make robotic legs to help a paraplegic, I'm also making super strong soldier legs. You know, again, it's like for every application where we could help a significant portion of the population, we're also making crisis. So I appreciate that Boston Dynamics is taking this step. I think we're in for a very significant challenge in the coming years with the philosophy of this type of research and this application and this science and this engineering. And then where is it really going to be applied? Because at some point, someone else who doesn't share our values in valuing human life is just going to start using similar platforms and similar research and weaponizing it. And then we have to make a choice. Are we going to join them? Or are we going to find other alternatives in rising to that challenge? And that's difficult. And that can be even more expensive. And then these companies don't make as much money. So where do they put their R&D? And the whole thing spirals. It is such a head trip trying to account for this kind of evolution in our capabilities for manufacturing. I'm going to take a real big swig of coffee here. Just one second, I'm going to mute because this is going to be gross. It's going to be really slurpy and you're not going to hear it. Okay, get this back. From Dave Burns, if this kind of stuff worries anyone, I highly recommend looking into progressive ludism. If this is going to fundamentally change how we live and how our society functions, we should get a say in how it's implemented. Yeah, I'd agree. Moving on, we've got one more story here. We've been kind of poking around this. I actually haven't just straight said, hey, this is the gig. This is what's going down. But we've been looking at EU regulations. And last week, we got literally almost a week ago, we got the final breakdown for the EU's mandate on USB-C. I don't know that I could be more critically disappointed in how this is going to roll out. And I think it's basically just infinite runway for Apple to eventually engage in business practices that I think are even more anti-consumer. I'm really disappointed in this because I think it's going to be avoided. I think it's going to be really easy to avoid. Written up by Sharon Harding over at Ars Technica, EU's USB-C mandate approval puts pressure on Apple to replace the Lightning port. But it really doesn't. That's me editorializing their editorial. They didn't say that. I did. Okay, so here, let's really break this down. European Union is moving forward with legislation requiring USB-C charging on a variety of consumer electronics. Now, skipping another paragraph, the Parliament's announcement confirmed a timeline and additional affected device categories. Legislation requires a USB-C port on all phones, tablets, digital cameras, headphones, headsets, earbuds, portable speakers, handheld video game consoles, e-readers, keyboards, mice, and navigation systems that are sold in the EU that use wired charging and support power delivery of up to 100 watts, quote, by the end of 2024. So, this is double. This is a double win for Apple. By the end of 2024. So what iPhone are we on right now? It's 2022, we're on iPhone 14. 2023, iPhone 15. 2024, iPhone 16, and at the end of 2024, we'll be moving into the iPhone 17. The as I'm reading this, if we get an iPhone with a USB-C port, it will have to be included on any iPhones sold starting in 2025. Apple has all of the runway through 2024 to keep selling Lightning connector devices. Now, what if Apple decides that they don't want any wired charging on the iPhone? They're only mandating USB-C if it uses wired charging. So, we can get to 2025, and I believe now that's when Apple's going to pull the trigger and just say, hey, we've closed up the port on every iPhone. Every iPhone now just charges wirelessly. That's it. Apple got the best sweetheart deal out of this they possibly could. Apple gets 2 more years of licensing. They will need to change the case on the AirPods. So AirPods and AirPods Pro, that case needs to change. Not the AirPods themselves. Those are still terrible e-waste. They can't be repaired. They can't be recycled. They're basically just garbage once the batteries start to wear out. But Apple can change the case to better comply. But the big update for the case over the last year or so was adding support for the watch charger. So the watch charger now charges the AirPods case. Well, just stick with that. Maybe you could also close up the case. And so now future AirPod cases won't have any kind of cable charging, because isn't it just so convenient to waste a whole bunch of extra electricity by charging wirelessly for everything? I'm so frustrated that this is the way it went down. This has actually been a concern and an issue and something that would be a consumer benefit if companies were really encouraged to share these standards. And instead, Apple's been given every single loophole, every single consideration, every special privilege, and they're making, and again, this will lead to a worse experience for consumers for it being slower and more expensive at the same time as it's going to be worse for the environment. And Apple can then also turn back and say, well, because of these regulations, I mean, we've got to make the best products that we can. And for our customers, we've decided to go this route. So unfortunately, it is. It is more expensive to have MagSafe chargers everywhere. And these chargers are going to end up in landfills because we care so much about the environment that we have to sell these larger pucks of magnetic charging. But that's really the best way to use these products now that the EU is forcing us to either do this or put on a USB-C port. And USB-C is old technology. You heard from the YouTube relationship manager. Even he says that it's old technology, and really we should have been consulted in making a better universal standard for all of our customers. It's clown shoes. It's so disappointing, because this could have actually affected some change. This actually could have affected some positive compliance. Apple never likes to play with any kind of standard. They purposely break agreed upon standards so that they can charge their customers more for proprietary solutions. They're never on board. I'm so mad that this is yet again the consideration that Apple gets that like no other company gets. We saw recently, like, the EU is holding this like massive fine for Google. Great. Do Apple next. Apple is so overdue a significant market correction in how they do business, for their anti-consumer trends, for their anti-repair trends, for their lack of adherence to computer standards. And this is what we get. We get yet another 2 years of runway for Apple to do whatever they want. And then we'll work on managing the fallout from that. But it's going to be Apple again getting everything that they want. It's so dumb. So, hold on, let me get through some of this chat here. I'm way behind. Do do do. Dave Burns, portless and right into super e-waste. iPhone 17, the main board cannot be separated from the screen. But again, Dr. Claw, you're saying like the portless iPhone will become the most useless iPhone ever. And I think what's frustrating is we've already seen it's just a component of marketing. So Apple goes out there and says, hey, look, isn't it crazy? Our phone is totally portless and seamless. And isn't that so sexy? And it's just going to become another like fashion accessory. It already kind of is. So I'm very frustrated about that. Oh, and Pakostin, there's a further note talking about how laptops must have this in 2026. Again, silly that they're giving them that much time to design something which should be pretty easy to incorporate in any laptop shell or build. The note about laptops irks me. Barrel jacks can be more reliable, and there is no complex negotiation done through the USB-C hub plus charging controller. Having would be ideal, but path of least resistance. So the thing about your point with barrel connectors, I'll be very curious to see how, because I feel like the only laptops where that's going to be the more significant challenge are on the beefiest of workstation and gaming rigs. It's like when you've got a really hot CPU and GPU working in tandem, that's kind of where you need like your big bricks. I'll be curious to see if they can get around that by saying, hey, we've got a barrel connector, but then you can also charge over USB-C also. I think for the most part, when we talk about like thin and light laptops and notebooks, it just makes more sense to have like a cabling standard and a charge and power controller that manages that through one kind of universally agreed upon cable. I feel that you could make an argument for having both, and that the EU, yeah, that's a very good question. I actually don't know. I'm gonna have to read into that a little bit closer. So that is a very good point, and I am ill-equipped to further dissect what that might mean for future high-performance, high-power solutions. Because USB at like 140 watts might be insufficient for future gaming rigs once the 4000 series of GPUs comes out from NVIDIA. That's gross. Oh, man. Oh, it's so rough. Oh, yeah, and Dr. Claw, any shout-out for Hugh Jeffries? Seeing the things that the likes of Hugh Jeffries have exposed regarding the anti-repair nature of iPhone construction. Everyone should be following Hugh Jeffries, and if you really want to learn about what goes on in your gadget, you bought the gadget, you should own the gadget. Hugh Jeffries is one of my top picks now. I think he's it's so much better content than like a lot of the YouTuber, hey, watch me break this phone kind of content. Like that stuff was salacious. It was like, hey, will it blend? Cool, I guess. So Hugh's videos and teardowns and repairs and stuff like that, his commentary is so much better than what a lot of other entertainment focused channels might try to do. Yeah, we would call that greenwashing for sure, Dr. Claw. Absolutely. All right, let me get this out of the way here. That's going to do us for the news block. I still rambled on a whole bunch, but tried to narrow down the number of stories. Let me get it. Does it bounce? Greg. I took this phone and I chucked it out a window. Let's see if it bounces. I've been doing my YouTube all wrong. What I need to do is just purposely break gadgets and turn them into garbage. And, that gets me more clicks. So, I mean, screw the environment. As long as I'm getting more traffic, I'll purposely break a whole bunch of phones and then people will think that's neat. Oh, dude. CopyCash, the worst part of a portless iPhone possibility is that every copy shop, library, etc. will have to renovate to include all these wireless chargers. And every other manufacturer is going to copy them. Every other accessory manufacturer is going to put money into investing in it because they get more money. You can sell wireless chargers at higher prices than a USB cable and all of the additional power draw. So wireless charging does not charge as efficiently as a cable. So it doesn't seem like a lot for the individual. Like, oh yeah, maybe it's, you know, it's less than a buck difference a year. Add that up over billions and billions of gadgets. And now suddenly we're talking about firing up significantly more power generation just to offset the change in charging technology. Not even an increased use. Like, the gadgets would be used kind of the same as they are today, but the inefficiency in charging those gadgets means we have to light up a lot more power to handle that at scale. This is a miserable strategy. If Apple is allowed to kind of pull this off and they are not forced to use USB-C as a primary charging technology for the iPhone, then it's going to be a cascading effect of terrible business decisions across the entire smartphone market. Samsung will immediately copy them to try and make more money, and then everyone will be sort of forced to adopt a bad idea because 80% of the United States smartphone market is Samsung and Apple. Every single time I talk about competition, this is the type of BS that we have to contend with because of a lack of competition. So everyone who gets Chuckle House, oh, Motorola, they still make phones, or fur. Yeah, you need to acknowledge that there's good competition out there because Samsung and Apple are wrecking our industry. They're actively squeezing consumers as aggressively as they can. DTNL. By 2027, we will have reached a point where if you recharge your phone, you'll officially be one of the poors. I mean, whenever I run out of battery life, I just go buy a new phone. I don't speak broke, yo. You're using your phone more than once? Ugh, I just threw up in my mouth. Quick shout out. This podcast does have like a complimentary subreddit. I forgot to share my videos last week to my own subreddit. So last week, we had a kind of a different shakeup. I wasn't promoting the subreddit, and I wasn't sharing on the subreddit, and I had a lot of other work that I was trying to tackle. But if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, this is a community we're trying to help grow that is built to help promote content we feel deserves more attention. It can come from a larger YouTuber, and we have a video on here from a very large YouTuber. But on the whole, what we're trying to say is, this was a quality piece of conversation and more eyeballs should be on it. And this is a wonderful place to come and find different producers, different content creators, a much broader community of people talking in tech. So the A number one story, Apple knew a supplier was using child labor, but took 3 years to fully cut ties, despite the company's promise to hold itself to the highest standards. This is a report from Business Insider cross-posted from R Technology, and that was our top voted story on Glowing Rectangles. The second story is an editorial from truthout.org, Apple's sinister influence on the smartphone industry. I'm feeling a trend. And then number three, the unlocker, why you should pay attention to the RAM in your next phone. We have a Surface Tablet editorial from Inocio. I think that's how you pronounce the channel name. And Hugh Jeffries tracking down the owner of this lost iPhone 12 Pro Max. Just a great roundup for the top five stories this week on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Dr. Claw, truth out, writing about Apple. That's very cool. I obviously have been sharing my personal feelings and preferences and biases for a couple of years now, talking about some of the absolutely terrible experiences I've had with the PR of these companies, trying to point to business practices that I think have been terrible, from the removal of headphone jacks and the elimination of memory card slots to the basic consumer lifestyle interactions, the diminished support for third-party repair. I mean, time and time and time again, we see a couple of companies leading the way on some absolutely miserable anti-consumer business practices, and calling it out takes so much more effort because as soon as you do, you're just labeled a hater. We've got plenty of evidence that this isn't just
blind hate. Oh, Apple's popular, so they're stupid. No, they are actively co-opting massive portions of the tech community discussion and manipulating the conversation around their products in ways that will ultimately be bad for consumers. And if that isn't talked about a bit more aggressively and the money on that isn't followed a bit more consistently, then all of our products are dying. This is actually, so what I'm talking about, I kind of wrote up a little first impressions on these e-bikes. I'm building two Velotric. I believe that's how you pronounce the company's name. I actually need to follow up with them. They make two road bikes, a road bike and a fat tire. Very inexpensive, but powerful pieces of hardware. I'm going to be doing a set of sponsored videos on them. But one of the reasons why I've been trying to reach out to more of these companies, scooter companies, following up on Segways. I did the OneBot little folding e-bike, great little commuter e-bike. I'm trying to find ways of diversifying my channel because the writing on the wall for North America, this smartphone industry that we have is unsustainable. It's not fun and it's dying. We're eventually getting to a point where any potential we've had for exciting, disruptive phone technologies is getting ground under the heel of Apple business practices. Apple doesn't want you to do more with your phone. They want you to own a phone and a tablet and a laptop and a desktop and have your phone only does the phone things. And apps for your tablet need to be different because tablet apps are tablet apps and phone apps are phone apps. And then we want to have control over your desktop apps. Instead of just having programs that you can easily install, just go through the Mac App Store for apps. It's not fun. I'm not having fun. This sucks. It sucks because, like, now when I say things like, hey, people in this chat are like, hey, check out Dex. Yeah, it's compute power. Do you have more compute power? Then you should be able to do more work with that compute power. And I'm tired of fighting tech enthusiasts on YouTube. So I've been talking to TK and we've been talking about some strategies like what to do with our channels. I'm going to be point blank here. I'm going to start pivoting, not entirely. It's not like the entire focus of my channel is going to change overnight, but I want to talk about lifestyle. I want to talk about mobility. I want to talk about urban density. I want to talk about the politics of getting bike lanes installed. I want to say, like, how do we reduce car use? Gas is almost $7 a gallon in my neighborhood. You know what? Taking little short treks to the supermarket is bad driving for an internal combustion engine vehicle. And now I've got a little e-bike that gets me there just as fast, and I get a little exercise. And that's not bad for me. That's pretty good for me. So that bike was not prohibitively expensive to reduce my reliance on my automobile, and it's better for my health. Okay, that to me is a much more interesting conversation than, or at least it's a more fulfilling conversation than, let's let Apple get away with more anti-consumer business practices. Isn't that great? Apple makes so much money. Aren't we happy to be on the winning team? Apple, 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 Apple. And I'm done. Like, I'm out. This is the big nope button for me. So that's where we're gonna start shifting a bit. Sorry, I know, like, that was supposed to be the subreddit plug. So check out reddit.com/glowingrectangles. I got to take a drink of water as we get into the gadget blog here.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hello, my name is Martin, and I run the Tech Altar YouTube channel. I talk about tech, obviously, but instead of focusing purely on the devices themselves, I mostly analyze the companies, their business and marketing strategies, as well as the industry trends that shape the gadgets we all love. I studied business, I work for a couple of tech companies like Oppo in China, for example, and I'm building my own tech startup on the side right now, so I really like talking about these topics. And if you enjoy zooming out and trying to see the bigger picture as well, you can find me by searching for Tech Altar, that's A-L-T-A-R, on YouTube, and you can also come say hi to me on Twitter as well. Thanks, Juan.
All out of coffee, and I need to be better caffeinated for this. Like, maybe I wouldn't be quite so cranky if I had more caffeine. Pakostin, speaking of wireless, wouldn't it be wonderful to see that amazing rating of output directly on the box? I'm betting $5 some companies will report the results only with official chargers that have like 0.2 millimeter distance to the coils or something along the lines of minimum current. You know what? That's actually a really good idea. I would like people to start lobbying their local government, and then maybe also sending like Department of Energy. We could send some emails to DOE and say, we need to see on the box not just charging speeds, but how much power makes it from the charger to the phone and how much loss. For example, we have a rating standard on power supplies for computers. We need a rating standard for wireless chargers for phones and tablets. I think that's a really good idea. Pakostin, I think you're onto something there. I'm gonna mull that around in my brain, and I might need to do an editorial on that. And then also I might need to start harassing some elected officials for that. That's some good thinking. I like that. That's more practical than don't star it. Come on. I just want to block this user. All right. Get that out of the way there. Good. So Raj, Raj says, while I understand the sentiment, but when people like you tune out of the smartphone industry conversation, we lose even more to these mega corporations. Sure. The problem isn't just whether or not I'm tuning out. The problem is, are we seeing that support from an industry, from a fan base, from people activated? I can only bash my head against the wall for so long. Like, when it really does start getting this not fun, at some point I need to move on. It's not like my channel's blowing up. It's not like my conversations are somehow overpowering the Google algorithm to help me spread this message. I can plea every week for people to follow a broader conversation on this subreddit and to support this type of journalism and to share these kinds of articles. And if it doesn't really make any traction and I look at another channel that has 10 million subscribers going, but aren't pixels always lame? Then at some point I gotta bounce out. Like, if that's what YouTube is telling the people that they want, at some point I can't keep fighting YouTube all by myself. So like I said, it's not like I'm turning it all off tomorrow. I still love mobile technology. I'm going to go down with the sinking ship. But let's acknowledge that it's sinking. I mean, along the way, let's point out that we already hit the iceberg and the boat's going down. That's what I'm doing. If I don't raise the canary in the coal mine alarm, then we're all just going to keep pretending this stuff is cool and fun and fine, and that's the reality of it. So, yeah, you can keep asking me to harm my own mental health, but at some point I need to pull the trigger on getting on with the rest of my life. You know, I can only grieve for BlackBerry and LG and other players that are walking away from the smartphone industry for so long. At some point, I just stop, and then I buy a Sony, and I'm good, and then that's it. You know, like, that's kind of my own personal stake in all of this, too. So, oh, man, we've got a bunch, like, this really annoying series of bots and stuff. I don't know if I can. Hold on. I might be able to jump in here because I am... Twitch is better! Okay. Oh, TED Talks Tech. Yeah, the ship has sunk. I knew we were bad when I was hoping the Freedom Phone did well so we can have some sort of variety in the US market. So, but this is also the problem, Ted. Who do we still have left in the United States? Obviously, Samsung and Apple are 80% of this conversation. We still have Motorola. Motorola is making some monster phones. If you missed out on the Edge Plus, you missed out on a Galaxy S22 Plus killer. It's a phone that goes toe-to-toe with an Ultra for everything but maybe camera tech. Like, you missed out on a phenomenal piece of hardware. We still have Sony selling unlocked. Actually, Sony did better this year than they did last year in getting phones to North America on a more timely schedule. Sony phones are brilliant. We still have OnePlus. OnePlus under Oppo is making some of the best phones the company has ever made. Miss me with all of the folks complaining about, oh, OnePlus is just a part of Oppo now. Yeah, the phones are better. I want better phones. I don't care about boutique solutions for Oxygen OS. That's lame. Give me the better phone with the better hardware and the better updates and the better synergy. I'm all for it. That's Motorola, OnePlus, Sony. We've got TCL making some good budget handsets. We've got unlocked solutions from companies like ZTE. So you can get an Axon or a Red Magic still. Those are baller phones. I don't know that Black Shark sent anything directly to the US, but you can still import. That's not as convenient. Asus, that's scary. We still haven't gotten like an official Western release for Zenfone. But if you're not supporting those companies, then they're not going to keep sending phones here. And of course, there's always like the Pixel, which we're going to be talking about here in just a sec now that we're properly into the gadget block from my detour in trying to manage stuff on stream live with YouTube's miserable support for streaming and podcasting. It's literally the worst. I can do this stuff easier in real time on Facebook than I can on YouTube. I'm not feeling it. But Ted, sorry, I don't mean to pick on the sentiment of that, but it's like, if we don't acknowledge that we still do have some competition, then it's just going to get gross. Oh, good. El Jefe reviews. On a good note, my Asus Zenfone 9 has been getting steady updates. That's always a plus while it lasts. It's the same thing. I need to double check. My Axon just recently got an update that removed the ability to dedicate storage to a swap space for RAM. I don't understand why this became such a big deal that you go in and you say, well, take 3 gigabytes of storage and turn that into more RAM. Swap space has always been a thing, and having sort of a variable or fluid swap space to me makes more sense than purposely dedicating 3 gigabytes of storage that then you can't use. I don't know. I don't understand why that became such a big deal, but ZTE removed it. There was supposed to be another update coming out soon, so I need to check on my Axon and figure out what's going on there. And Geek Madden, Pixel did a lot better this year, so if Google doesn't cancel it, it might become a third player. I mean, I get the joke. Google cancels things. I feel like they've had a pretty steady track record from the Nexus through the Pixels of having a phone in their lineup that is sold directly to developers and consumers. So I'm not anxious at all that Google's just going to say, you know what, cancel the Pixel. Again, we make the mistake of looking at Google as one entity. It is not one thing. The Google hardware division making Pixels and cameras and hopefully a tablet, they've shown some consistency in phones. Where they were weak was on Chromebooks, and I'm super sad that we're not going to get another Pixel book. But I believe canceling the Pixel book is a good idea when you're calling everything else Pixel. Pixel Buds, earbuds. Pixel the phone, a phone. Pixel tablet, Android. So it doesn't make sense to have a Pixel book not running Android like your Pixel tablet. That's confusing. So now I feel they need it. I would love to see them come out with first-party hardware again, but it doesn't make sense to call it a Pixel. You don't want a Chrome OS product confusing consumers even more between Android and everything else. So it's great. Oh, TK, helping me out, man. I appreciate it. TK coming in clutch, making Jeff a moderator. But here's the deal. I'd still much rather you just watch this on Twitch. I mean, all of you people on YouTube slumming it on YouTube with a poorer quality stream and worse tools for us to moderate how bad the chat gets, great. You're doing good job. Stay on the YouTube, I guess. The better version of this stream is on Twitch. real quick, I just want to point it out. It's just funny. This isn't a big deal, and I understand why people are trying to hype up some kind of an Apple story. But of all the ways that we're going to criticize Apple, this is one of those you're like, yeah, it sucks. They've got to figure it out. They'll patch it, they'll fix it, or they'll eliminate it. Jeff, I have the power. So yeah, now if any other spam bots pop up, I appreciate it. I really do appreciate it, Jeff. I'd never besmirch your interactions on YouTube as a platform, but I got to talk trash because I have not had these kinds of problems on Twitch, and I consistently have these kinds of problems on YouTube. So, popping this up right here, Wall Street Journal was the original, I believe they were the original outlet to break this story. Owner of this iPhone was in a severe car crash or just on a roller coaster. Apple's crash detection for the iPhone 14 and new Apple Watch models can alert 911 and emergency contacts in the event of a collision, but it sometimes triggers when people aren't in danger. So, yeah, that's amusing. It's a goof. You make a thing and you try to incorporate that into a product, and like crash detection is a useful feature. It was a useful feature when it was invented by Google. If you remember, Apple did not invent this, and we do a miserable job of giving credit to the companies that really delivered the innovation. Well, that we would do well to remember. If you cared about this feature, you also would have cared about this feature on a Pixel. Oh, I don't care about what Pixels have that iPhones don't. Oh, the iPhone now does this thing that a Pixel can do? It's about time. Like, what are we doing? Again, if you care about what these products can do, you should care that a company came out with a feature like this first. I just feel bad. I mean, it's going to be extra work for the emergency services numbers for iPhones, especially around amusement parks. Already, I would imagine that if you live in an area near an amusement park, those emergency services, they're already activated at a higher level. And it's going to be even more important that they get good information because they have real calls. I mean, people get injured in parks and in on rides and or even just have health issues because you have a greater population of people concentrated in those areas. So if you work in emergency services or if you're a first responder or something like that, those clear lines of communication are vital to performing your job adequately. So this is a bummer. This really is. It's embarrassing and it's silly. But I have to believe it's going to be one of those things that gets patched relatively quickly. We've already seen someone please, and if you have an iPhone, I'm not trying to make you besmirch the phone that you own, but iOS 16 for the iPhone 14 is already on its second like decimal patch, and we're already looking at iOS 16.1. So that says to me, Apple isn't any better at launching software than Google or any other company, or any other Android manufacturer. We're already into a major update, a 0.1 update. There are so many things that still need to be patched and fixed and updated. So Apple doesn't do software better. And we have a much smaller pool of like Google users that have had features like automatic crash detection. But even for that, I can't remember, and I did a little Googling, but I didn't really dig in too deep. I haven't seen any false positives on Pixels. So when it comes to crash detection, Google did it better first. So I just like, we need to sort of eject this narrative that somehow one company is, I don't know, like, is inherently superior at delivering these products. That's not how any of this works. So this is a little egg on Apple's face, and it's good for a chuckle. And I definitely feel for the people whose jobs are being affected by some of these issues, but we've got to do a better job of journalism than just like, Apple did something bad on the iPhone, and then it's this, which to me is a very small issue in the grand scheme of where we could probably also criticize Apple. Oh, LFA reviews. Agreed. Bugs persist. People are also reporting Bluetooth issues. AirPods aren't staying connected well with iOS 16. I feel that might be a Buds issue. Is it really affecting older ones? Because I had the AirPods Pro 2, and they did a terrible job of not only initially connecting, but staying connected to my old iPhone SE. I felt like that was maybe more an issue with the AirPods, that they needed a firmware update, not that it was the phone. But if it's across the board on iOS 16, that might have explained some of the issues that I was having. Geet Madden, iOS 16 at 16.1 has CarPlay broken. Great. There are bugs in iOS shortcut apps that have carried over from 15 to 16. So yeah, Apple hasn't been all that great with software for a while now. I feel like the entire industry is due a refinement year. Android 13 is basically a refinement year. Android 12 was kind of a mess. Almost everyone who was early in putting out Android 12 had to pull back updates. Google had to pull an update. Samsung had to pull an update. Samsung delayed a bunch of updates. And who else? OnePlus. OnePlus had to pull an update also for Android 12. Android 12L was the real version of Android 12 that we should have gotten. And now Android 13 is the sort of polish, right? Apple needs to do the same. There were so many security threats and holes and bugs on iOS 15. iOS 16 needs to be way less ambitious. They need to really fix problems. And it sounds like there are a few more that are just bigger problems. So that sucks. Ooh, TED Talks Tech. You know what we should do is we should try and correlate some of this data. Ted says, I wonder if the brain drain from employees leaving Apple because of work from home policies is contributing to this poor feature bug software updates. You know what I bet you? I bet you middle management at Apple is going to blame work from home for all of these issues because it's just not the same collaborative team spirit that it used to be. And we here at Apple, we really pride ourselves on the creativity of our employees and how they work together. And when you sacrifice some of that, then you end up with this disconnect between the product managers and the engineers and the consumer experience. And so we really just need everyone back in the office. And I doubt that that's the issue. I do want to highlight this real quick. While we got a half hour, there's a major event, not tomorrow. The October 12th is Wednesday. I know the days of the week. So there you go. And Jeff, thank you again, man. I just saw another round of bots hitting the YouTube side. If you're still watching on the YouTube, I feel bad for you. But you all need to subscribe to El Jefe Reviews and thumbs up every single one of his videos. Click autoplay and watch all of his videos and let the videos autoplay on his channel because he is doing work to support this stream and keep the chat from being as gross with the bots that YouTube lets run rampant on their platform. Everyone in this chat, and even if you're on the Twitch, you can also throw Jeff a shout out on the Twitch too. Everyone on this chat needs to say, thank you, El Jefe Reviews. I am not going to continue on with this podcast until I see at least 3 people saying, thank you, Jeff. I'm seeing people on Twitch say it. I'm not seeing people on YouTube say it. What's up? I see Grounded Tech saying dot, 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 dot. That is not thank you, Jeff, Grounded Tech. Grounded Tech, you should join us on Twitch, man. I don't see why you're floating this. See, the Twitch community is saying, what up, El Jefe Reviews, and thank you, you're doing good work. The YouTube side of this, what? So, yes, Jeff, my brother from another mother, and the person who is almost single-handedly responsible for getting me back into Bluetooth audio, one of the best audio channels on YouTube today, some of the most insightful and experienced and consistent earbud and headphone reviews that you can watch, a number one gold star, you should be liking and smashing bell icons and everything that we can do to kind of encourage a better interaction for his channel on YouTube. Thank you. I really do appreciate you. You've constantly been one of those contributing forces in this whole community. Like, stepping up to mod someone else's channel is such a huge deal. Words are insufficient for the thank you and for all of the support that you've lent to this community. So let me get this out of the way here. Microsoft event. Here, let me throw this up right here. This is from the Engadget. I have not been on the Surface train these last couple years until I got, I did get to go hands-on, sorry, I'm going to click out for just a second. I did get to go hands-on with the Surface Laptop Go 2, and I was very impressed for what Microsoft has done with a somewhat more expensive but still more student-grade laptop. So there's a big event. Microsoft is going to have another Surface event this Wednesday. That's October 12th. Excuse me. And Engadget has a write-up on some of the things that we'll probably get to see. They're saying it's likely we'll see a Surface Pro 9. And again, I would imagine in the photo that they share on this, a lot of these are going to be more internal improvements, maybe some spruced up just specs, hardware, processors, all of that stuff. But I do like that we're going to see probably a bit more momentum on accessories like the Blade keyboard. So I have a Surface Duo 2, and the main way that I charge my Surface stylus, my Surface pen, is with the little USB charger. One of the things I really like about the design for the Surface laptops and the Surface Pro are having little magnetic spots where you can stick the stylus pen directly into a keyboard blade and have it kind of trickle charge directly from your computer that way. Those types of little, so when we talk about like ecosystem, those types of little manufacturing considerations, for me, that really helps kind of draw these products together. You can put stylus support in a Surface, that's awesome. Putting stylus support into a Surface but no way to charge the stylus makes the stylus a little less useful. I mean, again, it's also the, I don't know if I have it here on my desk. I think I actually have it in my bedroom. The same problem I had with the Motorola, the Edge Plus, having the stylus pen support is you've got to charge it in a special case that maybe that's not the case you always want to use. So having this built in where Engadget is showing one of the keyboard blades, this is a great consideration for improving the functionality of that as an accessory. Now, according to Engadget, sources believe Intel-based Surface Pro 9 models will use 12th generation Core i5 and i7 U-series processors, while ARM versions will reportedly come with the SQ3, a custom variant of the Snapdragon 8cx Gen 3. So I'll be very anxious to see if Microsoft is going to push a Surface Pro 9 with an ARM chipset. That to me would be really exciting to see. If we could get Windows on ARM with better Android app support now found in Windows 11 and with probably not as powerful as a 12th series i7. I mean, let's be clear. An Intel Core i7 12th gen gonna murk a Snapdragon 8cx Gen 3. Like, it probably wouldn't be close. But if we get better Windows on ARM support, better app integration, and we get a better performance per watt, that could be really exciting for me on a Surface tablet. I would be really excited to see that, because the Laptop Go 2 gets very good battery life. But as I'm writing a script and I can feel like even the fans kind of kick on a little, the battery life on that is just good. It's not amazing. And I feel like if we want good portability, good performance, and we want the best runtime for out in the field, the Surface Pro is the best idea of hardware to give us Windows on ARM, to really maximize that kind of performance per watt conversation. And you can have that saying, like, hey, if you need all these legacy apps or x86, the emulation on that is going to be slower. You're going to have a performance hit. But if you can work in this type of mode and you're using these kinds of apps and you use these kinds of services and you're more web-based and mobile and you need that kind of battery life, Windows on ARM is going to be your jam. And I really hope Microsoft can start leading the conversation on that, as opposed to kind of, well, we've got Windows and we've got Windows 11 and we've tried like Windows RT and Windows X and Windows this and Windows Consumer. It's time to just rip the Band-Aid off and go Windows on ARM. And I think then you're toe-to-toe with some of these conversations where the MacBook has been occupying so much of this sort of consumer runtime battery life conversation. Yeah, that's right. 12th gen should be nice. Yeah, grounded tech. I think that's totally, it should help. But I feel like, so again, sorry, let me get back to the Engadget article, because 12th gen on something, oh, I just jacked up my mouse settings. Hold on. There we go. Nope, messed it up again. Too slow. There we go. Getting into... This is the best podcast I've ever produced. Getting back into the Engadget article on what to expect, we should see a refresh also for the Surface Laptop 5, 13 and 15-inch portables. Again, 12th gen Core i5 and i7. There's a rumor that there won't be any AMD versions of the Laptop 5, but that because they're going Intel, maybe we'll get support for Thunderbolt 4. I'm putting the rumor of no AMD a little higher. I'm putting the rumor of Thunderbolt 4 a little lower. Microsoft has been pretty conservative in their implementation of new connection standards. So if it's USB-C, that took a little bit to bring to the laptops and to the tablets and stuff like that. I'm not as positive on that. But where I look at, like, you've got a shell and a clamshell and a lid and a screen and a keyboard and a hinge, I feel like if you're looking at the Surface Laptop, it does not make sense to try and go Windows on ARM there. So again, Grounded Tech talking about, hey, 12th gen should be pretty cool. Intel 12th gen in a traditional laptop form factor, where you can probably include a slightly larger battery, there's more of an expectation of it being used in a more sedentary kind of way. Like, you go to your favorite coffee shop to work on your screenplay and you can plug it in at the coffee shop, and then you've got good battery life when you're out and about. My Surface Laptop Go has been amazing in that kind of mixed but seated kind of use. I look at the Surface Pro as a different kind of mobility conversation, because it's a tablet that you click on blades. And there, I think it's we're really overdue. We're overdue the less power draw, but slightly less performant SoC from an ARM chipset. I really feel that's where we need to go. You come out with a Surface Pro and one flavor of it. We're not talking about just completely changing up the entire line. We need Surface Pros that still run Intel Core i7s. But you introduce Windows on ARM, not in a Surface Go, but in a Surface Pro. And then it gets people excited. Then you can incorporate a lower performance ARM chipset for the Surface Go, blah, 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 blah. And then, let me get this out of the way here. Engadget's also saying that we'll see a new Surface Studio 3, a really pretty sort of iMac solution, foldable hinge, mini sort of compute block with a monitor attached to it. That could be pretty cool. And then they've got some wild cards here, like maybe we'll see a follow-up to Project Volterra, a compact desktop aimed at developers building ARM-native Windows apps with AI features. So not really a consumer-facing device, but more a developer-facing device, but a tiny little box with just ARM hardware in it so that you can develop software for Windows. I think it's extremely unlikely that we're going to hear anything about Duo or Foldables, or I don't think we'll see a Surface Go. But this major event, I'm very anxious to see what Surface Pro does. Surface Pro 9, I mean, like, I haven't been on a Surface slate in so long, but the Surface laptops have been rocking my socks lately. And I think it's very critical. Like, they are a little bit more expensive than similarly configured laptops from competitors. It gives Microsoft credibility for making a nice product, but it also gives their manufacturing partners room to undercut them. I've played with so many plasticky student laptops. It's an expense. Like, that expense can be a burden, but there are so many families, like, if you can afford to just spend a little bit more, the Surface Laptop Go 2 is a better built student machine than a lot of these, like, lower cost plastic framed student laptops. I don't know. It's worth looking into what really makes those things different. Again, like, I'm shouting out different channels here. Like, was it Mobile Tech Review? Lisa, how do you pronounce her last name? Lisa Gade? I honestly can't remember how you pronounce her last name. Anyway, her experience in reviewing all of these different products and kind of zeroing in on who they might be the good fit for, those are the kinds of conversations you should be looking into, because it kind of matters. It matters at the tactile experience, the lid, the enclosure, the frame, the keyboard flex, the quality of the keys, the speakers that come up from the keyboard. I've had great experiences on that. And it's not a crazy expensive laptop. Anyway, Surface event on Wednesday. We'll be able to follow up and see all of the goings-ons for Microsoft. And I'm very excited to see what they might do with the Surface line. We've been seeing generally, and again, someone please correct me in the chat if I'm way off on this. Over the last year, in 2021, we saw a surge in computer sales, right? From 2020 to 2021, all of us were kind of camped out at home. There were work from home initiatives, there were Chromebooks for schools. All of these numbers skyrocketed. Sales were hot. It was hard getting new computers and new laptops into homes because, you know, people, they were selling out so aggressively. I'm a little frustrated that the market correction for that is being billed as a failure of the PC industry. So I saw another analyst report, like, sales for PCs are down, I want to say it was something like 15% on average over the entirety of the industry. And you're like, that's still higher than where we were going from 2019 to 2020. So it's really just this fiscal quarter year over year from 2021 to 2022. It looks like the PC market is cratering, but that's not really the truth of the sales of all of this. So I think the only one who's weathering the storm well is Apple. And it's the product line that I think deserves the most thumbs up and the most recognition. The MacBooks are wonderfully built machines, and I'm very positive on that M1 processor. I think the M2 is kind of like a TikTok, just kind of a light refresh. I wouldn't be too anxious about trying to upgrade if you already have an M1. The M1 is baller still. It's a great performance per watt, and it gets amazing battery life. We haven't seen the same kind of market disruption. So if Microsoft can kind of help spur on some of the Windows side of this as well, I think that would be good for consumers. And so this is also from Maddie. Two times the first comment from Maddie on Twitch. Thanks for jumping in and contributing to the conversation. Microsoft has already... Sorry, words are hard. Microsoft already has ARM Surface Pros, the Surface Pro X and the Surface Pro X Gen 2. They're thinner than the Intel Pro. They're just consolidating the lineup. I think that's kind of what I mean. I always lumped ARM with like more of the Go line, which obviously I was incorrect there. But what I want to see is just Surface Pro 9, Core i5, Core i7, ARM. I just want it to not be like a separate like product, because I feel like consumers get anxious, like, oh, why is that an X and why is that a 9 and this is different and this is that. And I know there are confusions in different ways. So you make it a separate line, that's one kind of consumer confusion. If you make it a Surface Pro 9, that could be a different kind of consumer confusion. I just want it to be more straightforward. We have faith in Windows. We have faith in Windows on ARM. This is the product that runs that. And I just kind of want to staple those all together. You know what I mean? I want to, like what you're saying, I want them to consolidate the line. And I think it would be a consumer confusion in the short term, and it would be better for the lineup in the long term. Anyway, but thank you. That was the correct comment to kind of help clean up my assessment of the Surface lineup. So thank you for that.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
So, let's wrap this up just kind of chatting Pixel 7. I did want to highlight PBK Reviews. They also do some really good teardowns. My absolute favorite teardowns are Hugh Jeffries and iFixit, but PBK has also done some really good work in this sphere too. I'm going to click onto their current video. It was released October 6th, Google Pixel 7 Pro Disassembly Teardown Repair Video. Oh, sorry, I clicked my mic back on while I was swallowing the water. That's how you know you're good at the podcasting. I muted my mic for just a split second so I could drink some water, and then I turned it back on for the gulp. Game. Oh, if this is your first time catching my show, I sincerely apologize for all of the calamity. That Pixel 7 Pro teardown is amazing. And I also like how PBK Reviews is going back and kind of looking at some of the refinement. In general, not to spoil the video, please go watch the video, and it's linked in the show notes for this week's podcast. It looks like Google has really taken to heart some of the criticisms of the Pixel 6, some of the thermal issues, some of the performance issues, and not like it's a radical redesign, but it is subtly tweaked internally to better manage thermal pads. So that could be good. Again, I'm hoping for maybe a 10% improvement in performance per watt just from the die shrink. The Tensor 2 is a little smaller than the Tensor 1. But then if they've tweaked the internals to better manage performance and heat, that should also give us like another 5% headroom over the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro. I've had very good experiences with the Pixel 6 Pro. It definitely runs warm, like every other 8 Gen 1 phone has. You're talking about high performance, and it's become another important talking point in a number of my videos and the sort of the consumer expectations that if you don't need that kind of horsepower, you really will be happier not paying for it. I don't know of many of my family and friends who are upset with the performance with 700 series Qualcomm mid-ranger chips. Like, they're really happy with Pixel 4As and 5As. Like, that's great. And then they get amazing battery life. So that is an important part of this conversation. I feel like you need to really have a good reason to step up to putting a monster turbocharged V12 in a phone. I produce podcasts and edit video from my phones. If you don't do that, maybe you shouldn't shop at this tier of phone just because it's nicer. Because it's not really nicer if you're expecting the bestest battery life and then you've got to charge your phone midway through the day because you're editing a podcast on it. So anyway, some improvements there. I really think there's some good stuff to kind of point out. There are some criticisms that are very on point, so please watch the video. Like I said, I'm not going to spoil the whole thing, but a few people in the chat have mentioned some of those. I was purposely not bring up everything because I want people to watch the video. But I did want to kind of use this as just the kickoff point. I'm a member of hashtag Team Pixel. I have my hashtag gift from Google on a lot of my videos and a lot of my commentary. I've been really appreciative of the PR that kind of works with Google to kind of maintain that relationship. And I feel this is going to be one of those awkward launch years for a product. As a member of Team Pixel, I have not received a phone. I don't have any firsthand experience beyond getting to hold it for about a minute at the official launch party that Google had with the PR rep, the PR team that sponsored that. So when Team Pixel gets to join that conversation, probably close to the same period of time that consumers will be getting their phones directly. So if you pre-ordered, you're probably going to be getting your phone around the same time as most of North American Team Pixel. But obviously, so many videos have already gone out. First hands on, first impressions, really in-depth looks at what the phone is already doing. There was a whole tier of press that was at the official Pixel launch that got to put out way more content. And so as it's been sort of rumored, apparently last year during the Pixel 6, a couple of larger channels got real pissy that Team Pixel folks were getting their phones close enough to the embargo dates that their videos were going to have to compete with more channels producing coverage. This is the rumor. It has not been confirmed by PR. It has not been confirmed by Google. But it seems that for a number of us who aren't considered press by Google proper, that will be delayed just a bit so that some channels get to produce their content ahead of all of the riffraff. So they don't have to compete with more people talking about Pixels. And that will be, we'll still get our phones early. So, I mean, we'll still get we'll get to join that conversation. But it seems like a part of this has been manipulated into different time frames for different people contributing. I'm still really happy. So the relationships I have with the people who run this team, I really like working with them. A group of people in PR that I've had pretty close relationships to since the beginnings of me doing audio reviews. Like, we're talking about relationships that have spanned more than a decade. And I very much enjoy working with them on different topics and different coverage. It's not just Google. I mean, this is before Google was making stuff, before they were working with Google. So I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus, but from where we were last year, at this time of the year, I was already joining some of those conversations to talk about hands-on experience and what it felt like and some of those early first impressions, just like so many other channels have already contributed to that conversation. And so I feel like I need to address that because I'm not joining that conversation. I'm not joining that conversation because I'm on such a strict embargo and I have the phone and I'm not allowed to show you the phone or talk about it. I feel I can clear the air on this and say, I'm not joining it because I don't have the phone. And my experience for actually holding it was literally just like a dark rooftop, you know, swanky bar in downtown LA. So I'm increasingly frustrated with the perception of influencer metrics on our videos. This is a very common talking point on my videos, on my channel, on my podcast. But it does seem like because someone can get immediately millions of impressions, millions of views on a video, that they will get preferential treatment to a point that makes sense. But now, unfortunately, what also happens is you get this sort of ratcheted cycle of feedback. So only a couple of channels get these sort of special considerations for early access and embargo and reviews, and that then reinforces their channel. Then YouTube is looking at, well, who's getting all this traffic? They get this traffic immediately when this embargo goes up. Let's just keep giving more YouTube attention to those influencers. And then the PR goes, well, hey, if we give our phones to all these other people, their videos don't perform as well because YouTube is manipulating traffic to these big channels, and these big channels already get special consideration and preferential treatment. By the time I get my hands on a Pixel 7, there are people that are out there that have been using it for weeks. So what am I supposed to do to compete with that coverage? I can't make an informed video on the Pixel with, you know, like minutes of time. No one's going to care if I do an unboxing on a phone that's already been like properly reviewed by another outlet. And it really forces me to scramble to think about like, well, what am I doing? What kind of coverage am I going to create for this product? So I'm probably airing a little bit too much of the behind the scenes. But the fact of the matter is, like, if I don't address this, then it just looks like I'm avoiding the Pixel conversation, or I think something's wrong with the Pixel conversation, or I wasn't included in the Pixel conversation. And I can't speak to other people's experiences. There's an enormous number of people that are now joining this Team Pixel initiative, and they all probably have individually different experiences with Google as an entity and PR companies as an entity and their own relationship with their own audience. So everybody's gonna have kind of a unique take or a unique consideration for what's going on. But it puts me in a sticky spot because of the kind of content that I like to produce. I like to do performance testing. I like to do camera comparisons. I like to do, you know, this type of real world activity. I like to try and compare this more realistically to other brands, as opposed to just saying like, well, the Pixel won't sell as much, so it gets a worse grade. And I feel like a number of the bigger channels are bigger because they lean into a popularity conversation. If you're in North America, it's really easy to just say Samsung and Apple are the best and everything is lesser than. Because then you've satisfied the egos of almost 80% of the potential smartphone market in the United States. And that is not a fair assessment of what happens with other phones. And we saw it with the Pixel 6a. There was a ton of outrage on 60 hertz displays and, you know, unsecure fingerprint sensors. So where are all those big channels now? The Pixel 6a is already running Android 13. I've got mine on a beta build. Show me the people that are demonstrating the security threat of owning a Pixel 6a, because it's out in the wild now. Real average consumers are owning this phone, and I'm not hearing the sky is falling. I'm not hearing the doom and gloom. Show me the people that really care about 60 hertz on a $400 phone that now is on sale for like $350. Like, it's so stupid easy to get a Pixel 6a crazy cheap. So show me that. this is the big problem I have with this algorithmic manipulation of our content. It creates these feedback loops. It creates these enthusiast, poorly informed chunks of audience, and then that just cycles itself. We don't bring more people to being fans of tech. We just satisfy the bias of the people who are already consuming tech videos. And there's no way to kind of break out of that. It takes one arm of this massive industry to step aside and say, like, well, no, we don't really want to play ball like that anymore. And I kind of wish they would. Like, I kind of look at the Google hardware team and the amazing experiences that I've had. I've done even a little consulting with the Pixel Buds team. I kind of wish, like, stop giving phones out. Like, focus every single penny of your marketing directly to consumers and meeting consumers exactly where they need to be and putting up pop-up stores now that, you know, the pandemic is becoming more endemic. And reach people directly and put phones in people's hands. Like, every phone that goes to a Team Pixel member, put it in a average consumer's hand and just try and spread that way, not astroturfing through PR initiatives, but actual grassroots with the people shopping for these products and buying them with their own actual money. And I feel like until a company does that outside of Samsung and Apple, we're going to be stuck, and it's really going to look bad on this entire industry. Again, like I was saying earlier on the podcast, like, I'm really making this show a downer. I'm watching the ship sink. This is not a sustainable industry the way that we're currently ratcheting it, and we have social media contributing to the demise of this competition. So it's pretty rough. Simon says, Hypno, I can't find your comment on my streamer, but I can see it on Twitch. I want to just highlight here. Okay. Simon says, Hypno, some gadget guy, would you prefer us not to kick up a stink on Twitter? My rule at the beginning of this podcast holds true even with something like this. There is no benefit for our hobbyist group here of really trying to raise attention on bad hot takes or things that are negatively affecting YouTubers like me. It doesn't help. It only enriches the people that are already benefiting from this ratcheted social media. We make a huge stink about how some channels are getting this and other channels aren't. All it's going to do is draw more attention to the big channels that are already profiting from their early access. We complain, like, how come Juan isn't getting this? People are going to go, well, who is? Oh, these channels, let me go see what they had to say. Like, literally, calling attention to anything that you feel is a bad take in this kind of PR algorithm social media context is bad. So if you are motivated to do anything regarding a situation like this, what I need you to do is I need you to go to TK Bay's YouTube channel and share a scooter video. I need you to go to Barry Johnson's channel and share one of his Xiaomi camera videos. I need you to go to El Jefe Reviews and share every single one of his earbud videos from a company that deserves more attention than just the SEO on Samsung and Apple. When you look at Jeff's videos, he doesn't go light on one more because they bring in less traffic than Samsung. He goes just as hard on one more in making that video. Which video is going to get more traffic? Which video is going to reward him better for the effort he puts into? And let me tell you, it is so much effort reviewing earbuds. There is a physical toll to how much listening you have to do. Jeff puts his body on the line to bring you fun videos about earbuds. So complaining, how come Juan doesn't get a Pixel 7, but some big YouTuber does, just makes the big YouTuber more powerful. Go to these other channels. Go to Easy Computer Solutions and share one of his videos about an LG V60. Go to Gadget Goddess and share one of her videos talking about foldables that we don't get here in the United States. Do not mention the channels that are benefiting from this lopsided arrangement, that gives them more money, that gives them more power. Every ounce of our effort needs to be expended in leveling the playing field and not complaining about bad hot takes and people who are already the predestined winners, according to YouTube. There are real people in this chat right now that need your support. I'm really not one of them. I appreciate your support. I benefit from your support. Please keep supporting my content. But on top of that, there is an entire army. There's this huge, broad, beautiful, vibrant, hilarious, fun community of people that are making incredible content that are getting squashed under the heel of this type of manipulated conversation on tech products, consumers, and lifestyle. So, Simon, it's not going to benefit if we make a stink about, well, some people get it and some people don't. Last year, a couple big YouTubers got real pissy about having competition. That should tell you all you need to know. Should you still be following these channels? Tell YouTube not to give you that content, great. But talking about that in any other kind of more specific or broader context in social media just takes energy out of sharing the content that really will make a difference in this conversation. Be the change you want to see in the world. And it's a bummer. But I'm going to start talking about e-bikes. I got to take a drink of water and then we got to wrap this up. Oh, Jeff, man, I mean, no joke. The 6A camera is dang good to run circles around flagship devices, especially for darker skin tones. Not even darker skin tones, because I'm a pretty pale skin member of our peoples. Actually, Jeff, I feel like you can commiserate with me on being sort of a bald by choice pale skin in our various families of people. The Pixel cameras do the absolute best job of capturing the quality of skin that I have. And that deserves so much more consideration. Apple cameras make me look kind of more red-skinned. I'm getting a little even flush just from wrapping up this podcast. But the sort of yellow and green in my skin is properly depicted on a Pixel, where so many other cameras kind of gloss over what I really look like. So the benefit of improving cameras for people of color extend to also making us pale skin folks properly represented when we're not all the same kind of pale. And you've got a $350 Pixel 6a that does that better than $1,000 iPhones. So if you care about features like easier to use and better cameras, then it matters that you point out those kinds of things in conversations rather than complaining about, oh, but the 60 hertz. Oh, Geet Madden, I think this goes back to what you were saying previously. You can't rely on the smartphone market to keep your channel afloat. I watch your content for the niche opinions you offer on those devices. If you get a device late, I still care about your commentary. I understand it is much harder to grow that way. And it's not even about growing. I mean, it's like actively fighting YouTube from shrinking my channel. That's the other thing that's frustrating, is like YouTube has become a gatekeeper to my audience. And YouTube does not share my content with people who say they want to see my content. And so it's every opportunity I can take to go back to some older methods of publishing, writing articles and sharing that kind of content, just so that I can have a more direct relationship with the people who might be interested in what I have to say about things. And I'm increasingly thinking, like, I might do just some light video coverage of the Pixel 7 just to let people know I've got it. And then each one of those videos is just going to be an advertisement to say, oh, and the review is going to be written on somegadgetguy.com. Oh, and the camera comparison is going to be hosted on somegadgetguy.com. Like, that needs to be it, because if I try and play this YouTube game, I'm going to just keep losing. Like, I'm going to be increasingly crushed for more and more effort to try and appease the algorithm that's never going to come back to the amount of work that it really takes to accomplish that stuff. And it's gross. It's gross. It's real gross. See, Barry, you didn't realize that this was also on YouTube because you were already on Twitch. So you were already watching the superior version of this podcast. But I appreciate you checking it out and giving the link an extra click on the YouTube too. Because this is the other thing too, if you're watching this on the YouTube, this is one of the things that TK and I are talking about. If we post podcasts to our personal channels, you know, the channels with the bigger audiences and the more subscribers, YouTube punishes our view metrics. If I post a bunch of like 7 to 15 minute videos and then I dump a 2 hour podcast, YouTube goes, well, but your percentage of watch time, well, that's not good enough. We need to stop recommending your videos in search. They're not popular enough. You're not getting all of the watch time. So we started our own little side podcast, Best of Our Week. And it really is just a way for us to kind of check in with each other, kind of hang out. We're friends, and we like to just kind of chat about what's going on in our lives. And, you know, through the context of also reviewing a bunch of really cool gadgets. So, I can't really upload. I don't run another YouTube channel. I just have my personal Some Gadget Guy YouTube channel. I mean, I guess I also have my old Some Audio Guy YouTube channel that I pulled all the videos from when they pulled my monetization. But not really. So TK and I are talking about where we can put long form streams. And we think we're just going to look at consolidating every long form conversation, and we'll work together. So when he does his Saturday morning stream, it'll show up on the Best of Our Week channel. When I do my Monday morning stream, it'll show up on the Best of Our Week channel. And if we decide to do like a co-unboxing, like we did a joint unboxing of a phone, maybe we'll just do it here on the Best of Our Week stream. And that way it's not a 2 hour piece of video on my personal channel that then manages to mess up my channel specs for putting more effort into making more YouTube content. So this was the soft launch for that idea. If you caught this on the YouTube, the main focus of my conversation is still going to be the Twitch audience. The Twitch platform and the Twitch audience have been consistent, and they've been there, and I appreciate having some competition in this space. And I'm not saying don't watch it on YouTube, but the way that I see these comments and the way that I have control over what's going on this platform, I prefer Twitch. So that's where the majority of my focus is going to be. But I'm going to keep co-streaming it to this channel. So if you want to see our podcasts, our long-form conversations, I'm hoping to bring some interviews to this channel. We'll have to see. I've always had bad experiences trying to get interviews going, and then people flake, and then I've got like a scheduled video that I was supposed to do, but then I can't. But this is where that kind of content is probably going to live. So thank you for those of you who are subscribed and are checking out the Best of Our Week YouTube channel. That's probably going to grow to become more of a catch-all for long-form streams and conversations. The Twitch is going to stay the same. SomeGadgetGuy.com is where the audio version of the podcast is going to live. You should be able to find the podcast on every other podcast catcher. None of that is going to change. Twitch and RSS are my jam, and now we're going to try and find some way of getting YouTube to play ball at all. And it could crash and burn. It probably will crash and burn. But we're going to let it crash and burn by giving it a good shot. We're going to give it our college effort. So I want to thank everybody for jumping in, for tuning in. Eventually, there will be some Pixel 7 coverage. I can't tell you when. I literally do not know. Whenever it comes, it will be significantly later than people who have already been using the phone under embargoes. So whatever that means to you, or whatever that conversation looks like, cool. I mean, Ha Sam, you're asking questions. I can't tell you anything. Like, I do not know. That there has been no communication as to what this is going to look like for folks who have been Pixel fans to the point of using Pixels past the point of case failure. And I would like to highlight that. I have used a Pixel 6 Pro to the point of the Google case completely falling apart, where the frame has cracked and the plastic material is literally shredding off of the plastic base of the phone. I have actually used this thing to form opinions on what it's like to operate a Pixel as a daily driver. I've used it as the example phone on reviews.org and on Slick Deals. I can't tell you when I'm going to get hands on a Pixel 7. I don't know. I'm going to have to join a conversation that is already front-loaded by people that have had the utter disdain for less popular devices on YouTube. And that's what I'm going to have to contend with in my comments. That's the tone of the conversation I'm going to have to deal with because they've got larger audiences. And it's a pain. And it's a pain I don't really even want at this point. Like, I'd be almost fine just to keep using the Pixel 6 as an example device. That's how disheartening this whole conversation is about phones. I'm using some e-bikes and I'm having fun. I'm getting exercise. I'm teaching my daughter how to ride a bike. And maybe that's just what it needs to be. We want to talk about technology and disrupting and doing exciting things and lifestyle. Maybe that's where I need to go. So be on the lookout for my coverage of the Velotric e-bikes coming soon. They will be sponsored videos. The company is working with me on producing this coverage, and I am having a blast gunning a throttle and hitting 20 miles an hour almost immediately on some really decently built electric bicycles. So stay tuned, because that's going to be fun. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in for this calamity of a podcast. Everything that could have gone wrong absolutely went wrong. And I appreciate everybody who's going to be hitting the replay on this, because it's going to be some really good times. I will, of course, stay tuned for everyone who's streaming over this week, because we're going to have some good coverage. Like, Pixels will eventually start shipping to consumers. People are going to start getting their phones. Reviews are going to be fun from the people that really spent their money on these phones. Focus on those folks. They're going to have much better thoughts on what these things are and what they can do, because they've got real skin in the game. Tomorrow we should be seeing Gadget Goddess. Wednesday we should see Easy Computer Solutions. Thursday should be Ike Talks Tech. Who am I missing? Michael Pepper Tech. TK and I are going to be streaming Friday. I'm forgetting, folks. I think Tech Valor? Is she? So I think Tech Valor, and then LaShawn, Holler at Your Boy, he should be streaming his Friday night stream. Folks streaming over the weekend, I don't know what TK's plans are. But basically, every day this week, there's going to be some phenomenally fun conversations surrounding tech. And we've got some fun things to talk about with new phones and new gadgets coming out. So subscribe, share, participate. Putting some effort into supporting these content creators, and it's going to go a long way. It's going to go a really long way to broadening this conversation out and having more fun. Folks, I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show. Hopefully running smoother than this week. And be well. Take care. I love y'all. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.